Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
God bless you people out there in Blood River Radio. I want to thank every single one of our donors and our supporters. It's hard to remember all of them, but I want to thank you for making this possible. I've had two different people to tell me today that I've been called by God to do this. And listen, I ask you people out there to pray. Please keep me in your prayers that I never get an ego. I never get a stubborn pride. You know, God hates, one of the things God hates is a proud look. We have nothing to be proud about. We're here doing God's work, and we're trying to get this message out. You know what? If the stinking government, the Zionist media network, all the people, you know who they are, trying to shut us down. Well, by God, we're going to get this story out. We're going to get this out. And so, you know what? With that, I'd like to let you know that Blood River Radio, this is an exclusive production from Blood River Radio, is bringing you because of our donors that have faith in us. We promise you we're going to take it to the streets, and by God, that's what we're doing. And listen, we have another sailor here. His name is Gary Brumette. And what a surprise. He was on the United States Ship Liberty that fateful day. Gary, you will tell them a little bit where you're from, where you grew up, you know, anything about yourself. Then we'll start going to the Liberty. What happened that day?
Gary. Grew up in Louisiana. Grew up on a dairy farm. I spent a couple of years in the Navy. The rest of my life has been spent in Louisiana. I was a rural mail carrier for a living, for the most part, along with fooling with cattle. I spent 32 years with the post office, and I was a surviving crewman from the USS Liberty that was attacked 8 June 1967 at 1,358 hours. I got to say this, it was a clear, sunshiny, bright day on a crystal blue ocean. They can never say they didn't know who they were attacking because they saw us. By their own admission, at 10-something that morning, using a publication called Jane's Fighting Ships, which is a British publication that lists all ships on all the oceans of the world, they had ID'd us as a USS Liberty AGTR-5. They said they had made a mistake, thought it was an Egyptian ship. Well, a blind man would know the difference. The difference in the ship's dimensions. We were 195 feet longer than the El-Kassar, the Egyptian ship, and weighed 8 tons, 16 million pounds more. It's kind of like comparing a 10-foot John boat to a power launch.
Wow, God almighty. Continue on, because I guess I'll save my questions. Continue on. Go ahead.
I can't hear.
You're fine. You're
okay. I spent roughly 21 months on board the USS Liberty. I was a 2-year Navy reservist, which I had a 2-year active duty commitment. 21 months of that was spent on the Liberty. I actually got a 2-month early out cut because I was in kind of a non-critical rate at that time. But I was in engineering. We comprised less than a third of the ship's complement. Our job was basically to get our research people, or the communications techs, the signal intelligence people, that was our mission. And my job, along with the rest of the engineers, was to make the ship go, get them there, what have you. Now, the USS Liberty was a nice ship. It had a good crew, a bunch of fine guys, and some excellent officers. I wouldn't say anything much bad about any of them. That leading up to this attack, I'll back up a couple of weeks. We were on a normal operations area, was off the west coast of Africa. We were in Abidjan on the Ivory Coast, and about 4:30 in the morning, General Quarters went off, and we was told to get ready to make way to get underway. We didn't have a clue where in the devil we were going. We steamed for 8 days, roughly 3,200 miles from Abidjan up to Rota, Spain. When we got to Rota, Spain, we took on ship stores, which what that means is we took on food for an extended deployment. Being in engineering, we took on 261,000 gallons of crude oil. That was, we spent 12.
How much was that again? How many
gallons? 261,000
gallons. Damn, that's a lot of crude oil. Go ahead.
We had enough crude oil usually on board. We could have sailed all the way around the world without a refill, but we always kept the tanks topped off. I was a boiler tender, and that was one of my jobs. We picked up 9 new crewmen, 3 Navy, 3 Marines, 2 were NSA civilians, and 1 CIA civilian. I did not know who they were at the time.
Oh, Gary, pardon to interrupt. That Marine was here earlier. He wrote a book. Who was the Marine earlier who wrote the book? He was the one that was burnt so bad. He was the only Marine on deck.
That would be Sergeant Bryce Lockwood.
Bryce Lockwood, yes. Bryce Lockwood's here. He's not here right now. I don't know where he is, but he's written a great book. We'll get to that later. But continue. I just want another name of that Marine, but go ahead.
But we were only there in Rota, Spain, I'm going to say less than 48 hours, no more than that. Everything was in a rush, in a hurry. We left there on the 2nd. We got on station roughly at midnight of the 7th, or 00 hours in military time. Myself personally and another guy, we'll just call him JP, that was his initials. We're both repair petty officers in B Division. We had worked on a pump for 20-something hours trying to get the damn thing fixed, and ended up, I got burnt during the process the last time we flew with it, and had to go to sick bay. JP put the pump back together, and we had been up, I like to say, over 30 hours, and we ended up, I went back to bed after I got out of sick bay, and we did, both of us probably got a little rack time around from 4 o'clock on that morning. Didn't have to get up till around 10:30, which that was unusual for engineers. And we got up and ate chow that day. We checked some of the equipment that was just normal routine stuff for us to do. I think it was ABC drill that day, or no, NBC, nuclear, biological, and chemical. We drilled it for all situations. We had secured from the drill that day, I'm going to say about 1,345 hours, something like that. And the captain had come on the ship's PA, or 1MC, and announced hostilities on the beach, and we were about 12 and a half miles off the coast of the Sinai, close to El Arish. And there were giant columns of black smoke, which looked like maybe oil tanks or something burning. But from that distance with the naked eye, you know, I could see the smoke, I could see the top of a minaret. JP and I didn't stay up there long because we had work to do. We had a major project to start, which never happened. We had went back to our normal workspaces, which was a fire room, proceeded to try and work on a main stop for the boiler that was offline. When the first missile hit, I can remember jumping up off the deck, looking up because the whole ship shook, and I thought that a steam line had burst.
Gary, what part of the ship were you? What level? How many levels did the ship have?
It was 8 from the fire room floor up to the top of the uptakes was 8 stories.
Okay, 8 stories, wow.
And I was on the bottom one.
Well, you were the holy boat.
I'm below the water line.
That's the worst damn place you could be. Well, go ahead, Gary. I just want people to know. I'm trying to get them a mental picture of this. You're basically in a tomb. So go ahead, Gary.
I would have, the research guys that where the torpedo came through the side, they actually We were on the same level or probably just a little lower than them. Of course, being a country boy, I'm standing there, and before General Quarters went off, I hunted a lot as a young guy, and I could smell what seemed like burnt gunpowder. Well, no more than maybe 5 seconds of that smell, then our General Quarters alarm went off, and you might say the whole world turned upside down for us. We were under full-scale attack.
You know, how soon, so that was, about what time of the day was that when that first missile hit?
1,358 hours.
1,358.
That's 2 minutes to 2 o'clock civilian time.
Now, that you may not know, did that missile come from a fighter or from a torpedo boat?
Oh, that came from the planes.
Okay.
The torpedo boats were not on scene till 35, 40 minutes later. They come to finish the project. They started.
I got you. Well, how soon did you know that, I know the Star of David, I've been telling, am I right or wrong, the Star of David was plain on that, could be plainly seen on this ship, right?
I never saw it because I am below deck, and I mean, I heard all the shooting, I felt the vibrations, all that, but
We have to go to a quick break. People hovering on your site, as soon as we come back from this break, as you can tell, there's a lot of noise here because, you know, sailors are being, they're doing what sailors do. They're enjoying some adult beverages and they're having a really good time. I wish I was among them, but maybe after the show. But people will be right back. We're on holy ground here. I will return with the sailors just a minute. Be right back.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Hey, folks, we're back here with these sailors, and their sailors being what they are, you know, they're enjoying themselves, having adult beverages, and you know who the hell would deserve that more. But people, I consider this holy ground tonight. We have these sailors, these people, these guys. By the way, Bob Scarborough just came up. He showed me, I guess that was the Liberty Dance. He had him a little adult beverage and dancing around, showing us the dance. That's great. These guys, I love them so much. We bonded instantly. I can tell you there's nobody else in the world left like this. These guys are so rare. This thing we used to call, when I was a kid, called character. You know, character, if you want to know what it is, it's honesty. It's courage. It's a standing by your word. We have that in spades, double time, triple time on steroids here tonight. But listen, I'd like to also remind you, guess what? We'll take an hour break from 6 to 7. And listen, it's from 7 to 9. Sunboy himself, Pappy's boy. You know, me and James, we go back a long ways. We go back about 15 years, man. We used to be out in Beanville, out in Millington. But we're going to bring, after this year, you know, we go off, if you know, we go off the air here in about 40 minutes. But hang on to your seats. The sailors and other people are going to be coming on the Political Cesspool with James and company from 7 to 9. So don't go anywhere. Now, we're getting ready to go back to Gary. And Gary, go ahead, and I've got some questions to ask you about the Israelis. I'll ask you this question, and you carry on. How soon after that first missile hit was it? How long did it take before you knew that the Israelis were the one that did? Our wonderful allies. Well, how long did it take before you found out who it was?
It was, like I say, I was in the fire room area. I'm away from everybody else. The only thing down there was engineers. And it was probably an hour or two before word came down to us who the actual attackers were. I assumed it was Egyptian because Israel was our dear friend. All right, that's what we were told. Kind of didn't work out too damn well for us, though.
No, it did. You know, we all thought the same thing today. We all thought that, but I think we were lied to, didn't we, Gary?
Definitely misled.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, that's being kind. Yes, sir. But continue on. How soon, I know there was a lot of water and oil coming into that lower deck where you were. Tell the people about that. How long was it take before that hit, Gary?
Well, the spaces I was in did not flood. I was in the engineering area where the torpedo came through the side of the ship. Was forward of us probably five frames, which 25, 30 feet. I'm not sure the distance. But had it came the 5 yards further back, or 5 to 8 yards, it would have got the engineering spaces, is which what they were shooting at. Now, I had to throw a side note in here. In 1997, in Washington at a reunion, prior to everybody getting there, my wife and I went up early to be like tourists. Well, the skipper of our ship, Captain William McGonigal, he and his wife was there, and the chief engineer off the ship, Mr. George Golden. And I had the chance to speak and visit with both these men, devoid of a whole lot of folks being around. And the skipper told me something that I didn't know. He said that when we were under attack, when the torpedoes were launched and in the water, now, and understand this, I'm 20 years old, spaces I'm in are full of smoke, they're shooting torpedoes at us, and one's fixing to knock the hell out of us, and I'm probably 8 or 10 feet below the water level. That ain't a good place to be.
God almighty.
But the skipper told me, him and George, the chief engineer, were personal friends aside from being naval officers. He said he saw the torpedo coming. He said, I didn't think about George getting killed so much as Betsy, his wife, and their daughters losing George. And I had always wondered until that day, did the skipper try and miss the torpedoes if possible? And he said he did turn the ship. I didn't ask them that. He volunteered that. He said, I turned the ship into the torpedo, which made it hit research instead of engineering. Had it been just a matter of a few yards further back, had he not turned the ship, I wouldn't have been here.
Well, let me ask this question. I'm an old Army guy. I know the jack about being the ship. How the hell did he know where the torpedo was coming from? How could they tell where the torpedo was coming from and how to turn the ship? That's beyond my pay grade.
The motor torpedo boats was off our starboard side. I do not know the range from which they fired, but they were supposedly five of them fired at us. I've heard some of the guys say they saw one go forward, ahead of the ship. Two went astern, or behind the ship. One, nobody knows where it went, but we know where that other one went. It knocked the hell out of us, punched a 24 by 39 foot hole.
Damn, 22 by 39, holy. Yeah. Okay, can he come on? Okay, hey, can we stall him off? Ask him, can he come on? Ask Sam, can he come on? Ask him if it's possible to come on at 7, because we're going back on political supper from 7 to 9. I got so many guests here backed up. But see if he can come on from at 7. Send him to 7 if he can. Good deal. Go ahead, Gary. I'm sorry, it was getting rough. Go ahead.
It's old age and my mind's got holes in it. But the motor torpedo boat that had fired on us, and after the torpedo had hit us, now, all of us in engineering, everybody had been told to stand by to abandon ship. There was some question, was that order ever passed? Well, I damn sure heard it myself, but it was passed by voice.
What was that order? One more, how did you get that? I'm sorry.
Stand by to abandon ship.
Oh, holy Moses, okay.
And the torpedo hit us. I was standing where I was at in the ship. I would have been looking toward the aft of the ship. And it was like it picked the ship up and heaved it to my right, which would be port. And that lasted for a short time, and the ship sat back down like on an even keel. And then it really got scary because we started the tilt to starboard, which is your right side, and we ended up with a 13-degree list. Well, 13 degrees doesn't sound like much, but...
If you're out there in the damn water, but the line.
Oh, yes. But it was a frightening, terrifying event. But it wasn't over. The planes had hit us. We had a lull in there. They got some of the bodies off the decks, put out some of the fires. The MTBs come in. We got the torpedo. Then they came back with armor-piercing rounds.
You also hit at least one bomb from a plane, isn't that right, Gary?
Well,
at least
the
one.
Napalm was dropped on the plane, and I think that it ain't canister. It's not. I'm not that great on munitions, but I think it is a canister, which it has an explosive power. It's a burning gel, and anything it touches is gonna burn like hell.
You know, Phil Torti, who was a deck, another hero. He had a comment. I think he got the Bronze Star or the Silver Star. He said he knew right away that it was napalm, Gary, because he said he could not put it out. He used up today. He told us that he used up all the carbon, all the
CO2,
all the CO2. He used everybody. He went down below. I don't know if y'all call it a foxhole or whatever it is. I'm an old Army guy, but he was. They couldn't put the damn stuff out. And Gary, now also that napalm we got on some of the sailors. Did some of the sailors jump into the ocean because they were burning alive?
No, that's a falsehood. That never happened. That did not happen.
I'm glad. I'm asking the man who's coming from the horse's mouth. Now, how many sailors were hit with a napalm? Do you know we got it on them?
I'm not sure about that, but there are some of the guys that napalm, phosphorus, something. They were some that had some, you know, not. Real nice burns.
Okay. Keep a little bit closer to the mic.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. There's a number of the crewmen that had burns from that, but I would be doing would be guessing, and I don't desire to guess at something like that. But there were crewmen that was injured by it.
Yes, sir. Oh, I think the Marine. What was the Marine's name again? We talked about today. I was just asking you a few minutes ago. He was here. He's not here tonight. The one that wrote the book. He was here.
Oh, before. Lockwood.
Lockwood. That's why I can't remember his name. He was burned. I don't know whether. When people hear the music, we got to go to a break. Quick break. We'll be right back after this break, people.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Biden will meet with Queen Elizabeth, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, and Turkish President Recep Erdogan on his trip to Europe next week. Biden will travel to Britain, Belgium, and Switzerland next week, primarily for the Group of Seven summit in Cornwall. He will be meeting with Johnson at the summit on June 10th and then the Queen at Windsor Castle on June 13th. Later, he'll move to Belgium and Switzerland. First Lady Jill Biden will accompany him on the trip. In Brussels, Biden will participate in the NATO summit on June 14th. Among the topics expected at the meeting, according to the White House, are future threats and effective burden sharing. This week, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg urged the alliance to engage in more effective pooling of resources. Biden will meet with Erdogan at the NATO summit. This is USA Radio News.
Rockstar Radio. Did you know this station, this network, is looking for their next rock star broadcaster? That's right, we are. And it could be you. It could be you interviewing the guests, talking to the newsmakers right in the middle of everything. Have you ever dreamed of being a rock star show host? Now could be your chance. Together with this station, we'll help you with everything you need. The studios, the equipment, your own producer, a co-host if you'd like, and so much more. Broadcasting is changing. There's never been a need for fresh voices and unique opinions like there is right now. You can do this. Our professional team will guide you every step of the way. Sound effects, show content, building your social network media, and everything you need to be the next rock star broadcaster. Get all the details. Email bill@rockstar.today. That's bill@rockstar.today. To get started with your own show, email bill@rockstar.today. That's bill@rockstar.today. Don't wait. You could be the next voice for America. Email bill@rockstar.today.
On Friday, President Biden was showing optimism after the latest jobs numbers showed employers added 559,000 jobs last month. It was a big improvement over the April jobs numbers, though it did fall short of economists' predictions.
We have now created over 2 million jobs in total since I took office. More jobs than ever been created in the first 4 months of any presidency in modern history. Triple the rate of my predecessor, 8 times the rate of President Reagan.
The president said no other major economy in the world is growing as fast as the U.S. is right now. Former President Trump is reacting to the 2-year suspension on his Facebook account after the company's oversight board found he incited violence leading up to the January 6th riot at the Capitol. Trump wrote in a statement that Facebook's decision was an insult to the people who voted for him in the 2020 election. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed, you have to say something funny.
I can't say this enough. Without the Blood River Radio family had sent in supplying us with they supplied us with airtime and money. We're doing that. And listen, without the contributions that you people out there have given us, I couldn't be down here. Where is down here? Down here is we're in Pensacola, Florida. It took me 11 freaking hours to get here because I turned around. It's hard to read these signs. I'll tell you a little bit just quickly. Coming down here, 85 and 90, I'll say 80. 90 is the new 70. 85 is the new 65, 70. You would not believe how fast these people go. I was in Louisiana. Should have been in Louisiana, but I got kind of turned around. And I had a Louisiana Highway Patrol go around me. I had the crew set on 80 trying to keep up, and he went around me like I was just parked. And, 80 miles an hour is nothing down here. We have a guest, I won't say who he was. He drove down here. He set the cruise on 95. He's one of the organizers here. He's got this technology thing where he can tell where the cops are. But anyway, needless to say, Blood River Radio brought you this. We with time, effort, et cetera, and money and work. But I'm not, and I, listen, that's a work of love.
We're doing God's calling. We're trying to serve Jesus Christ. And the point is, I want to thank all of our precious donors out there, because this would not be possible. We've got to get this story out. This story has been trying to be, they're trying to bury it, but we're doing our best to get this story out of what happened. So with that, Gary, I didn't want to get too far off a fence, but also before I forget, we're coming on from 7 until 9 p.m. We're going to be on James Edwards' show, my little boy, from 7 to 9 on the political cesspool, and we're going to bring you some dynamite guests in, the ones that we can catch. Anyway, go ahead, Gary, finish up.
I was mentioning about the torpedo. That didn't end it. That was a second wave of this crap. That got through, and I'm down there, like I said, I'm 10, 12 foot below the water line, somewhere in that neighborhood. And we're slowed down, barely moving at this point, because all those spaces are flooding. Don't know what kind of damage we have. And in the engineering spaces, we were having trouble with all our equipment. Nothing went offline except one set of pumps. But I kept hearing a strange noise. I couldn't tell what the devil it was. And I actually didn't learn till probably an hour or so later. They were circling our ship, hitting us with armor-piercing rounds, which were coming actually below the waterline, through the bulkheads, and all the way across the engineering spaces, the total width of that ship. I know that crap was falling on us and hitting us, hitting the battle helmets, because we still all had those on. And I didn't know what in the hell it was and where it was coming from. Well, it was the fragments and shrapnel that was being created by the armor-piercing rounds. This was not an accident. As I said a while ago, the ship that they tried to say we were was 195 feet shorter, 8,000 tons. That's 16 million pounds. It's a whole damn bunch. Then the... what I would have to call the third phase was the helicopters came and hovering.
Here, let me add, Chris, something there quick. I don't know if it was Phil, but also in the movie, there also was a flag. It was an American flag, 8 by 5 feet. 8 feet by 5 feet. It was plainly seen. And listen, one more thing. I'm sure I remember this. They have documented audio evidence that the Israeli fighter pilots were talking about it's an American ship. More than one said that. And the Israeli brass said, we don't give a damn, sink that ship. Go ahead, Gibb. So they knew.
Well,
no question. It's not open debate. The Israelis knew it was an American ship, as did Lyndon Baines Johnson, the sorry dog.
Well, they had identified us that morning at 10:55 by their own admissions. That's been taped. There's no way that they didn't know who we were. They knew sure as hell what we were doing. It was signal intelligence. It was interception of messages. here I got old and lost my damn train of thought.
I'm joining the thought of it all the time, Gary. You're no problem.
But the helicopters came and were hovering at this point in time.
And those were Israeli commandos, right? Israeli Marines.
That is correct. The helicopters had armed personnel in them. These weren't medics and doctors as it was portrayed to be. you would be made to think maybe. A rescue mission to me doesn't come out there with armed military people. We had no means of defending ourselves short of some small arms in that locker they were having hell getting into it to get the guns.
You know what, Gary, I'm going to chime in here. You know what? I'm amazed. You had Marines on deck. The Marines are not there. They're not there to kill things and kill people and break things. That's my question right here as an old Army guy. Where in the hell were the Marines? Why could the Marines not get those M1s? I'm not bragging. If you give me an M1, I'd have wasted that damn helicopter. Those damn Israeli grunts. You know what? I'd have showed them I can make an M1 talk. I know the Marines can do the same thing. why could they not get the M1s out of the small people? In case you don't know what an M1 is, an M1 is a caliber 30. It replaced the modern 1906 Springfield rifle, bolt action rifle, a semi-automatic rifle. It was used in World War II in parts of Korea. It was supplanted by the M14, which shot the 308 round. Well, why could they not get those rifles?
Well, they couldn't get the rifles out because a duty gunner's mate, had been killed, and he had the keys to the ship's magazine in his pocket. Nobody else had a key. And they had to break into the thing. Well, by then the CTs had got the message out. Rockstar, we're under attack. The radio operators on the USS Saratoga picked this message up, and in open air frequency, they responded, "Help is on the way." Well, Israel had to have picked this up, not knowing where our planes may be or other. Vessels, perhaps a sub, things of that nature. And at this point in time, this is when and why that attack ended. Now, you had asked about the pilots. Yes, there are recordings of a pilot saying, yes, it is American. But, I mean, for them to deny any of this that they didn't know is just a blatant damn lie.
They're good at that. Did the best in the world line, Gary. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
I'm really through with what I'm saying, you know.
I'm sorry?
I'm really through with
that. Oh, okay, sure. Okay. People, that was all. Gary said he's ready to go. I guess he's going to go eat and whatever. He's got stuff to do. Thank you so much, Gary. Listen, I've been hugging these guys. It's like we're all twin brothers here. But listen, I'd like to throw another shout out. Had it not been for True News, Matt Scal and his two assistants coming down, we would not have been able to see that film. They brought some of the most high-tech equipment down here. And I was telling Matt earlier today, I have no end of admiration for these guys that can handle all that technology like that, because I can barely get my computer stuff up to do this show. But I'd like to thank them again. True News spent, God only knows, I don't know how many hours. Matter of fact, we'll get Matt over here to talk about that. Matt, come over here and tell us about that movie, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Tell the people about all the hell you had to go through this.
Check.
That movie. Tell us about Sacrifice
and Liberty.
Matt Scal from True News. He's our good friend. He's the best friend of the sailors you could ever have. Go ahead, Matt.
What do you want to know about Sacrifice and Liberty? So, it initially started as just an interview with for our new segment on True News. And I spent a day with the guys. I'd never heard of the Liberty, unfortunately. So many people have never heard this story. And as I was interviewing them after the first day, I told Rick, I said, "Hey, Rick, there is something here that we need to expound on. This is more than a segment for our TV show." And
by the way, that's Rick Wiles. He is the founder from True News.
I interviewed them the first day, told them, "Man, this is an amazing story." The second day, I interviewed them and got their whole story. And I'll just wrap this up when we come back. Yeah.
When we come back, Matt.
I'll finish up. All right, buddy.
People, we just
hey, you got to pay bills.
He's going to come back after this break. He's going to tell us all about the making of the movie Sacrifice and Liberty, the biggest heart jerker of all time. Be right back.
This is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Thank you so much. Hey, people, we're right back at Blood River Radio Exclusive, bringing you this this 54th meeting, the Survivors Reunion. But listen, Matt just told me something. The fellow we just had on a minute ago, Gary, he said that that man, the engineers, were responsible. They're the ones that kept that ship from sinking. Now, that was a little tidbit. Now, we're going right back to Matt Scott. He's going to tell you about all about making that movie, Sacrifice of Liberty. And he's also going to tell you how you can get it, and you damn well need to get that movie, because I tell you what, we need to support these people, and you need to support the sailors. Go ahead, Matt.
The response from this has been amazing. The emails that we get back, the feedback from the viewers that see this, they say it should be mandatory viewing in high schools and middle schools because it really it depicts what heroism is. Like they want to talk about really sacrificing yourself for your shipmates, and they didn't even know really how important that ship was to the rest of the world, because as we found out in the making of the movie and the real motive behind the sinking of the Liberty, it was ultimately to sink the Liberty so we'd be justified into sending nuclear bombs to Cairo and nuking Cairo, taking Nasser out of that region, which ultimately Israel wants, the greater Israel. And they were just another cog that needed to go down to get greater Israel unified, which the same was Syria. That's why we're in Syria, Iraq, and parts of Saudi Arabia and all of Jordan. But if the Liberty would have sunk, we would have been justified because they would have pinned it on Egypt. They already had sent fighters, they're 3 minutes away from dropping nukes on Cairo. Now, in the film, I have an interview with I didn't conduct the interview, but I found the interview conducted by a Russian investigative journalist who interviews a Russian submarine captain who was in the Med at the time. They were there as a retaliatory strike to hit if Cairo was hit by a nuclear bomb. They had pinpointed the Iron Dome as a strike point to retaliate on Israel. That's from his mouth. That's from the captain of the submarine's mouth. And the reason why they targeted the Dome of the Rock, because they had a high reflectivity of the dome, which they could hone in on. So what you just heard Gary talking, and if that ship would have went down, Cairo would have been hit, Jerusalem would have been hit, and who knows where we would be right now. It would have been thermonuclear war, and if it would have stopped regionally, we don't know, but that's the significance of this movie. And going back to how we started this thing, it started with a 2-day interview, and after the second day of interviews, I came back to the office and I was physically, I was shaken from what I heard, from the stories of the men telling me how they had to go recover the bodies after they were sitting in salt water for 7 days, and they were the only ones who could do it because they were the only ones with security clearance to go down there, and they had to recover their soldiers or best friends' body parts, and then put them together like a jigsaw puzzle, just to identify who they were. I went to Arlington Cemetery where they have the mass grave of 8 of the soldiers that they couldn't identify, and they're all buried together in one spot. To tell you how sad and deranged our government was, they, on their tombstone, put "killed in the Mediterranean." They didn't even acknowledge that they're on the Liberty. There was a big protest about that gravestone, and they got it changed. So they actually did change and said "killed on the USS Liberty," because before it looked like they could have died in an accident, like, you know, on a side of a road or whatever. That's how far they went to cover it up. They covered up the gravestones of these men. So I told Rick that this is not, way more than a 2-episode series on True News, and I said it's more than a single documentary, a full feature. I said I need to make this a 4-part series, like 4.5 hours, to tell the whole story of, to tell just the attack took an hour, to talk about the body recovery was an hour, to talk about the cover-up was an hour, and then to talk about the who, the what, and the why, that was another hour. The only other production companies that did anything on this was Al Jazeera and the BBC, and then the History Channel did something on it, like a special on it. And that was it. So none of them talked about the body recovery. None of them talked about the cover-up. None of them talked about how Matilda Krim was a Mossad agent inside the White House who was sleeping with the president each day of the 5-day of the 6-day war. I dug up all the diaries of that night, of that week, and you see the last person LBJ meets with is Matilda Krim at 10:30, 11 o'clock each night. The Krims bought a ranch next to LBJ's ranch in Texas. And it was to keep close track of LBJ. And I have one thing that LBJ and their library has is a treasure trove of audio and video. Lady Bird was obsessed with filming herself and filming everything they did daily. So there's hours and hours of footage of them. Well, going through all that footage, I found when the Krims and the Johnsons would hang out at the ranch, and LBJ would pick flowers and give them to Matilda Krim and hold her hand and look at each other lovingly while Lady Bird would sip on her iced tea, pretending like she didn't know what was going on. In the film, you'll hear LBJ talking to Abe Fortas, which became a Supreme Court justice, telling him he lets Arthur Krim look at every folder that comes through his desk. Number one, that's illegal to do. He's sharing top secret material with someone who has no clearance and has not been vetted. And probably, I don't know if he's a Mossad agent for sure, but he's definitely Zionist to the fullest, and was definitely using his closeness with the president to help Israel and whatever they wanted to do. So it was a scary time for the U.S., for the world, and by the grace of God, that ship did not sink. And truly, it's a story that shows a group of men, when their backs up against the wall, they'll do whatever they need to do, and they did it together, and they did it as 19, 18, 20-year-olds, this bonding together and fighting for each other, and when no one else would come to help them, they sat in the water for 17 hours unassisted while LBJ recalled planes to go to their assistance. I talked to the guy who was the ready cap, who was the first man off the America to come to the aid of the Liberty. And he was in the air as the recall came. And when he landed back on the America, he was told to never talk about it.
Wow.
Well, I talked to him, and he was 92 years old, fabulous man, great man. And to get his story, which was never been told, it's just amazing. So if you guys, this is something that's beyond entertainment. It's a part of history that hasn't been told. There's no narration in this movie. It's only told by the men who survived it, which I think is the way it should have been done. I let them speak for what they know, what they saw, and then I find experts to talk about other research that was found offside the ship, like Matilda Krim and that whole side of the going on behind the scenes of why the Liberty, why it was brought there. I mean, the official story was it was there to help people to be rescued from embassies during the Six-Day War. Well, the ship was sent to the Mediterranean weeks before. The plans were weeks before the Six-Day War even popped off. So they had to have known by their omission that something was going to brew. Now, their story was Israel just did this out of the blue and there was no warning. But through records that are in the diaries digging on what was going on the weeks before, we know that was a lie. They definitely knew that Israel was going to do something. Now, they might have started a little bit early, but the reason for the Liberty to be there was to be sunk. That is 100%. And the reason for that, too, the name the Liberty would have played so well in the press. They sunk the Liberty. Do it for the Liberty. Remember the Liberty. That's what the motto would have been as justification to go and kill Nasser. So, that's how we got to this point where we're at right now.
You know, Matt, I'd like to throw a plug in again. Talk to some of the guys from the Liberty, from the USS Liberty today, and I believe it was Mo. He talked about how you the tremendous. He said you were a researching machine. Also, you mentioned the USS America. Just so happens we have a sailor here that's going to come on James's show from 7 to 9. He was on the USS America. Back to you, Matt. Thank you so much. But you know, you have really this research this guy's done. Oh, how can they get this movie?
Yeah. So if you want to, you can buy this movie on a DVD set, or you can stream it and do a digitally download, so you can own it. You can download the film at sacrificingliberty.com. It's really easy. You just click on it. You can buy the four pack DVD or digitally stream it and watch it tonight. It's that easy. And we lowered the price to $12.99 for a digital download to stream it, or $19.99 for the four pack DVD.
You know, Matt, one of the guys, I forgot who it was, it could have been Mo. He said that the goal, the True News goal, is to make enough money and to get positioned enough financially where you can actually give the movie away free.
So yeah, we want to put it on a streaming system like Amazon, Netflix, or maybe our own. But we never went into this to make money. Obviously, I was the only one who did the film. I shot it and edited it. I flew out everywhere, so we did it on a very small budget. But that was never our intention. Our intention is to tell the truth of this story through the men who lived it, and I think we did that.
You've done that in spades. You have to see the movie to just realize just how much factual evidence is in there. But the first time I saw it, I had to go over about a week to watch it. I couldn't sleep. My wife couldn't sleep. She had nightmares. People, that's it for Blood River Radio night. Remember, tune in. We're going to take an hour break into 7 p.m. We're going to be back on the political assessment. We're going to be running the sailors in and out of there. Thank you so much. Thank you, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Thank you, God, my good buddy. Listen, we'll see y'all later. Hang on, 7 o'clock. See you on James' show. Bye-bye. Good night, everybody.
God bless.